Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You've been lost in the woods for hours now, stumbling around in the dark. You come around the bend and see two people roasting marshmallows over a roaring fire. They see you coming into the clearing and gesture over to pull up a log. Welcome to Campfire Ashes. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jess. Join us as we tell each other our originally written spooky stories around the campfire and then dive into the lore and legends that inspired them. Is it something that goes bump in the night? Is it something menacing lurking past the tree line? Or is it just weird and otherworldly? You'll find it here on Campfire Ashes.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or right here on the Geekscape Network.
Oh, hello there. I didn't see you come in. I'm Shane O'Hare of the Geekscape Games Podcast, the number one video game podcast on the Geekscape.network. Join myself, Derek Krennevelt, and a guest every fortnight as we discuss video game news, video game reviews, and dissections. That's Geekscape Games every 2 weeks on Geekscape.net.
Matt, would you say that you're addicted to spuds?
You know what? I might as well face it. I might be. I'm a real fan. Sweet potato, regular potato.
There was a time my dad took me to a local diner to buy me dinner. And this was like maybe 5-6 years ago. It's not that long. I was in my 30s. Uh-huh. And I ordered an open-faced turkey sandwich. Perfect meal, in my humble opinion. And it came with two sides and a soup. And I got mashed potatoes with a baked potato and the potato soup.
You know what's funny? I'm glad you mentioned that because I have a similar anecdote. I was out with my family and my wife, who is vegan. And we were on vacation together in Florida. And we wound up at, oh my God, I think it was an Outback Steakhouse. Not a good place for a vegan.
No.
And they had the only thing that she could get was they had like a plate that was like three sides. You could basically just pick three sides and that was your main.
Oh, God.
And she ordered a baked potato and mashed potatoes just like you did. And only after she ordered and then like a side salad and only after she ordered, she was like, I think I ordered two potatoes just because there was so little. And it was like, sure enough, yeah, a baked potato and a mashed potato, which I guess sort of go well together.
This would not benefit your vegan wife whatsoever. But since you mentioned Outback, I do need to give a shout out to Outback for unexplainably having the best clam chowder in the world. And I don't understand.
I've not heard that before.
I don't know why, but they have very good New England clam chowder. It's very spicy. It's strange.
I don't find myself at Outback that often, but I'm going to keep that in mind.
So you had implied this, I think, on our Living with a Hernia episode. We were talking about how the reviews said that every one of the songs that Al parodied would be forgotten in 15 years. And you said that you thought that that was the case for all but one of them. And I'm going to assume that you're not referring to the hits Ruthless People.
To Ruthless People.
No,
it's this, of course. Yeah. Of course. I mean, this song still gets played. People still know this track.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I mean, I'm just going to lead with this. In hindsight, by every measure, this should have been the lead single off this record.
So I can give you some insight on why it's not.
Please do.
So I'm going to read this from the Wikipedia, and then I'm going to go into something that I watched while we had our lunch break.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So this was the second parody recorded about a man's obsession with potatoes and potato-based dishes. A music video for the song was never made because there was a strict budget on videos for the album.
There you go.
And Yankovic felt that the video would just be one joke and not worthy of its own video.
I get that. I have to say, I totally get that.
And I'm not sure if you stumbled upon this live performance that I stumbled onto, which was Al performing at the 1987 MTV New Year's Eve party.
Oh, I did not see this.
So this video starts off with Joe Piscopo introducing Weird Al.
Great.
And Weird Al performs Addicted to Spuds.
Uh-huh.
And he's surrounded by what can only be described as women's legs in their fishnets, but the rest of them is a giant Mrs. Potato Head costume playing the drums, the guitar, the bass, and the keyboards.
Wow.
And they're clearly, it's clearly not his band in costume because these people have no clue how to play their instruments. Like the person playing guitar is just holding her hand on one, on the fret and just kind of doing this move over and over again directly behind Al.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's funny, and then it keeps going for another 3.5 minutes, and I'm like, I get what Al's saying here. There's only so much you can do.
The Robert Palmer video for Addicted to Love is literally him singing the song with the girl, like, almost like robotic, totally face, expressionless women as his backing band. And that's the whole video.
Yeah.
So, I mean, living in America, even with the stage setup that they had for that was way more, there was way more room in that to make a good video.
Yes. But if you're talking about what was the song that actually would have maybe caught on stronger, I fully agree.
Totally. Like, and I wonder if he was, I mean, again, we also talked about in that episode how Scotty Brothers were really pushing him to do something with that artist. So that probably also helped tip the scales. I also do wonder if Al, at this point, did he have concern about doing another? No, actually, that's not true. I was going to say another food-based song, but
this would have been
now
three.
We're a while behind. This would be three, but also, you know, he had done Like a Surgeon following Eat It in terms of the bigger hits.
True, true.
There had been enough time that had passed that this wouldn't have been like two on the same nose. It wouldn't be too on the nose to do it
again. Don't you worry. He was going to do a food-based video pretty shortly.
Oh, yeah. No, no, no. There was no concern about... you're right. For me to assume that he was nervous about doing too many food songs is ridiculous for me to say.
It's definitely... I get what he means. Visually, it doesn't make sense. And I think that what we did get in the UHF video, which we talked about last week for Dog Eat Dog, like...
A moment.
We get
this,
a couple moments and shots. It's
totally...
You couldn't have done a full video with any of it. You couldn't have done a full video with just a bunch of women that look like Al. You couldn't do a video of them all just dressed like Mrs. Potato Head. Like, it just wouldn't have worked. So I
no,
get it.
No, the 5 to 10 seconds we get in the UHF video is plenty.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, totally.
So I do want to know what you think about this statement that I wrote down. Because Al, we've talked about how Al tries to make these songs, when he does these parodies, like... Up until a certain point, you think it's the song, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, Eat It, prime example. Like, that sounds like Beat It all the way up until the hand farts come in.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about this version that doesn't sound... Like, when I hit play, I'm like, this sounds like someone covering Addicted to Love. And I think part of it is that Al's version actually rocks a little bit harder. In the guitar. Like,
it's funny, I've never thought that before, but you are right. This is definitely like, it's a little bit heavier. It's a little
bit
more rough and tumble.
Yeah, the tone's not as subdued. Yeah, like it's interesting because that's not normal. Like you said, normally it's how close can we get this to sound exactly like the original song. But this is like a little bit, I mean, it is, there's no chance that you don't know they're playing Addicted to Love, but it's
sure.
just a little bit heavier. It's a little bit rockier. It's a little bit... Like, got a little bit more meat to it, both in the guitar and the bass. The bass is cranked up on
it
this
is.
One.
It is. And now we're getting just into the nature of the song, which is like, you know, this is a shame because this is one of those songs that is probably even still to this day overplayed and easy to feel. I'm talking about the Robert Palmer, Addicted to Love. And easy to feel like, I've heard that song. I don't need to hear it again. And that if you think that, like, that's totally fair. But boy, I think this is, I love this song. I think this is a great, great, great song.
I actually just picked up my first Robert Palmer album the other day.
Which one did you get?
Riptide.
Riptide, which features this song on it. Yeah.
So we talked about this very briefly on another episode, but I did that one video for Geekscape where it was, I watched every music video that played in the first 24 hours of MTV existing.
Clues?
And Looking for Clues was on there. Ugh. And I was like, this song rules. Like, that song's fantastic. There was another song that played that day that also ruled.
Maybe Johnny and Mary?
John and Mary. So John and Mary, that song rules. I didn't realize that Robert Palmer was the man behind Bad Case of Loving You. Yep. And then Simply Irresistible. So I was like, you know what? That's 5 for 5 as far as I'm concerned. I've heard 5 songs by this guy. I dug all 5 of them. So yeah, the other day I was at a Goodwill just scoping out what they had in their CD section, and Robert Palmer's Riptide was just sitting upon the shelf. So I grabbed it. So I haven't listened to it yet. This was literally just the other day. But I grabbed it and I'm like, all right, I think I'm going to become a Robert Palmer fan. I can sense it in my future. But yeah, this dude rules. Like, his music's
great. He's great. Yeah.
But I get what you're saying. This song has the potential to get earwormy to a nauseating level, but it doesn't.
It walks that thin line. Yeah, this walks a thin line. I think, to me, I still like enjoy hearing this song. I get it if you feel burnt out on it. And it's funny because you're just naming all of these songs. Like, I'm assuming everyone also knows Simply Irresistible. That was also a very, very big song.
Which is a very similar music video.
Very similar music video. Yeah, no, he found something that worked and he held on. But if you see it, like that album, the Looking for Clues album, I think it's just called Clues, but holy cow, it's so, so, so good. It's a shame that it's weird. Like, he actually gets considered. I think a lot of people might even think that he was like a one-hit wonder of some kind. But
yeah, it's one of those ones where then you're like, oh no, you definitely know like Doctor, Doctor. Give me the news.
Yeah.
Okay, I know that song. And then it's like they hear Simply Irresistible. They're like, oh, I remember this too.
Yeah.
But I think it's because, so this is the thing that I've been realizing. As I've been doing One Hit Thunder and I've been fighting with people pretty regularly, there are these weird lines, though, drawn in the sand. Like, yeah. I angrily vented to Chris one time on a phone call, like, we're not called One Single Wonder, okay? Like, just because you remember that there were other singles by the band does not mean that they were hits. But there's also this element of, you have to remember, like, a song getting played on MTV a whole bunch didn't necessarily mean that it was going to be a charting hit, regardless how many times they played that music video. And, like, you know, the OK Go argument, like, OK Go had multiple music videos that were, like, cultural phenomenons. But it was at a time when Billboard wasn't counting YouTube plays as actual counts that would go to the charts. So, like, they are a one-hit wonder as far as the charts are concerned. The only song by them that ever, like, so it is. It's all these different factors, all these different things. But a lot of it is just people not realizing that songs that they like are by the same artist.
It kind of is. And Robert Palmer's career is very all over the place. Like, again, if you heard the song Looking for Clues, boy, does it sound absolutely nothing like...
No, not at all.
Addicted to Love. The first Robert Palmer album is called Sneak and Sally Through the Alley. And that's like a New Orleans, like it's inspired by the Meters and these like funk soul bands of New Orleans. After that, he made an album called Pressure Drop, which is named after the Toots and the Maytals. It's like a reggae inspired record.
The reggae song. Yeah.
He's all over the place. And especially on the early records, he really was very, very eclectic and trying all these different things. The Looking for Clues record is almost like synth pop. The song Looking for Clues reminds me of something that like Prince might have done early in his career. And then I can't really blame him, but once he started really having big hits like this one, then he kind of dialed it into like, okay, cool, I'm going to follow this path for a little while. But he is very eclectic with a lot of his music.
I don't think that it's an accident that like, you know, actually shockingly, Bad Case of Loving You even did not chart as high as you would think it did. Like, it charted for sure. But like, in the grand scheme of things, like, it hit 10. But
did the cover do better?
What'd you say?
Because that got covered. Didn't someone have a hit with a cover of that song?
Let me check. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. No, Robert Palmer's had the biggest version. It's the more successful one, but it was bigger in the United States. Sorry, I was looking at the wrong charts for a second. But, is his only top 10 hit up until Addicted to Love comes in, which... to me, says that, like, you know, he gets to Power Station and that's when he starts getting a few more songs on the chart. And I'm pretty sure that whole album of Power Station is more rock based. So it's like,
it is. Yeah.
He experimented with some sounds and then he's like, all right, well, the biggest song I had was this Bad Case of Loving You song so far.
Yeah.
That was my most straightforward rock song. Let's just keep leaning into that.
My confusion came from the fact that there are so many songs. There are multiple hit songs named Dr. Doctor.
Yes.
Which is why
a lot.
I forgot that the song is actually called Bad Case of Loving You, parentheses, Dr. Doctor. Yeah.
But yeah, no, that, like, it is interesting where you see that stuff too, where it's like, oh, well, case in point, similar to Robert Palmer, maybe not exactly like Robert Palmer. We infamously did an episode on Rick Springfield. Definitely not a one-hit wonder. Dude had multiple top 10 hits. But at one point, VH1 even included him on the greatest one-hit wonders
list.
And that's why we wanted to do the episode, is like, how does a guy have like 8 top 10 hits and still ends up in this category? And one that we get submitted a lot on the one-hit wonder page is a lot of people asking if they can do Better Than Ezra. And I'm like, Better Than Ezra had like a pretty sizable amount of like songs that did well.
That did well, yeah.
So
no, it's amazing how history plays out on these types of artists. And I wonder if Robert Palmer also, for those who don't know, he died quite young in his like early 50s. He got cancer, I believe, and passed away. And I think that also definitely has an impact. You end up locked in a sort of state when that happens, and you just kind of like get sort of frozen in ice, you know, in a certain way. And that often happens to people. So, yeah. Oh, no, he had a heart attack. I'm sorry. I'm just looking. He was on tour, and he was in Paris, and he died of a heart attack in 2003. He was 54.
Oof, too young.
Yeah.
Too young, sure. But that's, like, you're right. You get frozen in ice when you don't continue pursuing. Like, there could have been more late career success for Robert Palmer, for all we know. But there's definitely this weird like pigeonholed element. Chuck Klosterman talked about it in one of his books, where he talked about how, like, you know, Philip Sousa was not the world's most famous marching band conductor in the time when marching band music was popular, but all of the people who would have been alive to say otherwise are now dead. So somehow his music rose to the top. And he was proposing this interesting question, which is like, right now we all maybe say Nirvana was the rock band of the 90s. But in, you know, 2323, like, who knows what artist is the artist that, like, people who are just saying like, oh yeah, the Cranberries were the biggest group of the 90s. And there's no one that's alive at the time to be like, no, they weren't. Like, they were popular, but like, you know, so it is interesting to see how much time changes things.
It's true.
And shifts those things.
Yeah. And music gets marketed even after this person's gone, you know, marketing still comes into play forever.
So let's talk a little bit about the lyrics, because I do think that this is a pretty clever, there's a lot of clever play on words that we find in Addicted to Spuds.
I
you know, it's dumb, but it hits so well. You know, you got to admit they got appeal. just such a dumb line. And the other one that I never noticed the lyric until I was hyper analyzing it for this episode was, I've often seen them whipped, but they can't be beat.
It's also, there's a lot of great wordplay in this. The thing that I like the most, and again, now talking about an older perspective on this, the original Addicted to Love makes no secret of the fact that it is just very, very overtly sexual.
Yes.
The whole thing. And the amount of innuendo and just like sexual description and language that Al gets into this song about potatoes is really funny. Like, it is very, like, so many of his word choices, your greasy hands and your salty lips, looks like you found the chips. There's so much, like, I don't know, all that imagery still really tracks for the joke of it. I don't know, I like that a
lot.
It
works. Something that I noticed in both the recording and the live version that I watched, and that I don't fully understand is that Al doesn't sing the song very well. like there's some bad notes. There's some really high pitched things. And knowing how strong of a singer Al is, I feel like it has to be intentional. Like, I don't think that he's accidentally like, ooh, when he's singing things. But like, I don't think of Robert Palmer as like a bad singer who wasn't hitting his notes. Not. So I'm kind of confused on why he's like going for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know.
Because like, I definitely get when he, in years down the line, hypothetically, he might do a polka about alternative music and does something like you when he's doing a song. But like, it makes sense to me within the context of that song. But like, when I'm listening to Addicted to Love, I'm not like, the fact that he says things weird doesn't jump out at me at all in that song.
Yeah, no, I don't know where that came from. I mean, it could be just a total fluke. It could just be, you know, there's often a thing when you're recording, when you're making a record and you're trying to like capture something cool, often you wind up with a take of something that is imperfect, but for whatever reason, it just hits the mark the right way. It's one of those things where you're like, you listen back to it, you're like, I don't know why this is the best one, but this is the best one.
Okay.
And trying to come up with the one that's flawless sometimes doesn't actually get you the result of the track you need. And it's a weird thing. It's difficult to put into words, but it happens all the time where you're like making a record and you're like, this is the one and it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But it definitely is.
You cannot get me to explain to you why it's the one, but it's
exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's just, you're just like, you know, that's the take and you just go with it. So it could just be that simple. I don't know.
All right. Well, there we go.
What do you think counts as a case of spud abuse?
A potato soup with two potato sides, I think, is a little bit of spud abuse.
You know what? That is a great example of spud abuse. You're right about that. Is it just, as I'm saying it, I'm actually realizing the answer to the question is that this person is... literally, in my mind, it was like, this person is like being cruel to potatoes.
No, he's just abusing the love
potatoes, but he's abusing himself.
Yes,
with the intake of potatoes.
Let me tell you about the dumbest thing I've ever seen that brought me joy, Matt. So there's a minor league.
I love
baseball
that as a segue from my misunderstanding of an obvious lyric.
There's a minor league baseball team in Wilmington, Delaware, called the Blue Rocks. I am not a person who gives a shit about sports for the most part.
Sure,
but I love going to Blue Rocks games, and honestly, if you're someone who doesn't like sports, but you like Weird Al Yankovic, I do recommend checking out a minor league baseball game wherever you live. Because the minor league baseball games, as far as I have pieced together from the few that I've been to, is just pure chaos. They're just trying to get people in the door by any way that they can.
Right.
So the Blue Rocks have not one, not two, but three different mascots. Mascot number one, who's the most official of their mascots,
okay,
is Rocky Bluewinkle, who is a giant blue moose.
Rocky Bluewinkle?
Yes.
Okay, that's amazing right away. Okay, yes. I'm on board.
Number two is literally just a pile of rocks called rubble. And then their third mascot is Mr. Celery. And Mr. Celery is literally just an old, dirty celery costume that somebody found. And whenever they score a run, Blur's Song 2 plays loudly in the arena, and Mr. Celery does a lap around the bases.
Wow. Oh, I love that it was two rock-specific things, and then just Mr. Celery.
Just Mr. Celery.
Out of nowhere.
So Mr. Celery is like the lowest level of the three mascots.
Sure.
But everybody's favorite because he's ridiculous.
Of course.
So the one time me and my friends went to see the Blue Rocks because it was Celery Day and they were trying to break the world record for the most people snapping a stick of celery in half simultaneously.
Oh,
so when you
God.
Walked in and you paid your $5 for the ticket, they handed you a stick of celery and said, don't break it until we tell you to. Right.
Jesus.
But another part, this is what I'm getting to though.
Yeah.
Another part of this event was that there was going to be a celery eating contest. similar to like a hot dog eating contest.
Sure.
They created a through line where Mr. Celery, who cannot speak because he's a mascot, was not having this much celery abuse. So, when we all snapped our celeries and he was in the middle of the field, he dropped to his knees and started crying because he had just watched us murder his celery brethren.
Oh my God.
So then when it came time for the celery eating contest, they have like three or four participants and they're sitting there with a table of all this celery. And just as the whistle blows, Mr. Celery comes bursting out into the field and just flips the table and tries to free the celery from being eaten in the celery eating contest. My point being, that was celery abuse.
Celery abuse. That's an example of celery abuse. That's fantastic. That honestly sounds like a Mr. Show sketch.
It was chaos. I could not believe what I was
or
watching.
Or even something from Al TV. That's actually, it's very Al. Like that
it's
is
very Al TV for
wow.
sure.
All right. So, this is really good information. I had no idea that minor league baseball had this level of sketch comedy going on.
It's fun. It's fun. Wow. I mean, that's one of the only sporting events I try to go to every year, at least one. Plus, the tickets are like $5.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure they're begging people to go.
And the arena has a chicken and pizza inside of it, so I can get some of that Old Bay fries.
I wonder if your luck is that, do we have evidence that that's the case like across the board in minor league baseball, or are you just close to an exceptionally wonderful institution?
I feel like I've heard stories of other teams also having insane mascots and shit like that because they are just doing whatever they can to get people in the door.
I just like the idea of you telling me this whole story and then I go to a minor league baseball team and I'm just like, Matt, they just played baseball.
Yeah, this is just baseball.
You promised me chaos and mascots crying and it was just a baseball game.
True.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You've been lost in the woods for hours now, stumbling around in the dark. You come around the bend and see two people roasting marshmallows over a roaring fire. They see you coming into the clearing and gesture over to pull up a log. Welcome to Campfire Ashes. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jess. Join us as we tell each other our originally written spooky stories around the campfire and then dive into the lore and legends that inspired them. Is it something that goes bump in the night? Is it something menacing lurking past the tree line? Or is it just weird and otherworldly? You'll find it here on Campfire Ashes.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or right here on the Geekscape Network.
Hey, do you have an idea for a podcast but don't know where to start? Or do you have an already existing podcast that you want to take to the next level? Well, check out WeKnowPodcasting.com. From concept development to theme music to editing to logos, WeKnowPodcasting.com is a one-stop shop for all things pod. Don't hesitate to hit us up. We're very nice.
All right, so we've solved the mystery of spud abuse.
Spud abuse has been covered.
We've discussed if we're addicted to spuds. I think it's about time to rank the spuds.
Yeah, I've always been bothered by the "you don't mind if they're not cooked" lyric.
Yeah,
in this
a raw
song.
Potato is no thank you.
That's a real, like, I guess you do have to be truly, truly addicted to spuds to be on board for raw potatoes.
You know, let me ask you this real quick.
Yeah.
If you could only have a potato one way.
Here we go. This is what we're getting into. This is what this podcast's all about.
What's the route you're going?
If you can only have a potato. I mean, I want to have a better answer than this, but I think you're lying to me and yourself if you tell me that the correct answer is not fries.
Fries seems like the answer to me. Specifically, at least for me, shoestring. Shoestring is my go-to French fry.
Oh, see, now this is interesting. Here we go. This is where we go off because I much, much prefer a real thick, chunky fry.
Like a steak fry.
Steak fries or chips, if we have any people in the United Kingdom who are listening.
So,
like my wife, like fish and chips, like the big, thick, very potato-y.
So my thing with shoestring fries is that I've realized this about myself, which is as much as I like the potato, with the French fry, more than anything, the French fry for me is a vehicle to get more salt into my mouth.
More salt.
So the shoestring provides minimal potato for more salt consumption.
That's fair.
But up until maybe 4 years ago, I'd be like, French fry, 100%, not even up for debate.
Mm-hmm.
I have really turned around on my love for like a good, filled with butter, lots of salt and pepper, baked potato. Like,
I love a baked potato. I love a baked potato for sure. It's fantastic. And again, as we have covered in this song, generally speaking, whatever method you've got for your potato, I'm probably going to be on board.
You
got to,
short of it being raw.
Yeah, it's hard short of for it you being raw or short potato. Of it being on like, fire.
Yeah, it's hard like, for you to
I'm
hand me
I'm
going to
enjoy
gonna
this
consume.
As long as it's soft enough that I can eat it. Yeah, no, I totally agree. For me, it's funny you said the salt. I do like salty fries, but also for me for the longest time, and I've moved on from this, but it was very much a vehicle for ketchup.
Oh, yeah.
Which I loved so much. I went through a phase where if I had especially those thicker fries I was talking about, like steak fries.
Steak fries would, with ketchup just makes sense. Actually.
I would apply ketchup from the bottle onto each individual fry.
Okay, that's chaos.
As I ate it, until I did that in front of someone who looked at me like I was a goddamned monster and was like, what are you doing? I was like, oh, I guess I shouldn't do this, at least not in public.
You know what? Let's also just give one quick shout out, because God bless it when I see it on a menu. If I'm looking at a menu, maybe it's a brand new place I've never been to, and I'm looking at even the appetizers, and I see any form of mega fries where it's like, oh, it's just a plate of French fries swimming in fucking cheeses, maybe some bacon bits drizzled on top of them if you ask nicely.
Oh, yes.
It's, I mean, that is like the game changer of game changers. But, and this is something I've learned about myself, for me, it's got to be like shredded cheese melted on it. Don't just hand me a thing of French fries that you've glopped like a couple spoonfuls of cheese whiz on and called it cheese fries.
Oh,
like,
or a slice of American in the microwave. No. Like, get out of here.
I need this cheese to be like formed across the, like as if it was part of the potato from 100%, the beginning.
100%. It's the same with nachos.
Yeah.
It's like, don't waste my time.
No, I agree with you.
With inferior cheese products. No, I totally agree with that. Yeah, absolutely.
If I wanted cheese whiz with a nacho, I would go to a Mexican restaurant and order cheese and queso. I'm not here for your liquid cheese. All right, sorry. We got the very important French fry conversation done. But all right, where are we ranking addicted to spuds?
Addicted to spuds. You know, I have a lot of nostalgia for this one. I've talked before on the show about how like an early Al album for me was the Food album, which this is on. Having not heard Polka Party until I was a little older as an album, this was a song I knew from a young age and really, really liked. Now, as a grown-up, I'm going to put this is very Matt Kelly placement. This is going to like, I'm going to put this in between I Love Rocky Road and Ricky.
I am shocked to say this. I'm putting this higher than
Are
even
you?
That.
There you go.
I'm putting it between Eat It and Ryer the Kaiser.
Wow. I'm into that.
I do love that right now you and I have a very food-centric clutter.
there's a whole section in this area here that's very food-based.
It's just Eat It, My Bologna, Addicted to Spud, Ryer the Kaiser, and I Love Rocky Road are all just in one giant cluster with nothing intercepting there.
No, it's true.
But yes, so that's where I'm putting it. I did not expect to put it that high. If you had said, hey, name 10 Al parodies that you adore, Addicted to Spuds wouldn't even remotely come to my mind.
No, but I don't know. This is classic, good old-fashioned Al. It hits all of his like most mainstream marks, and that's why, again, I was surprised it wasn't a single. I understand with the video stuff and all that and Scotty Brothers, but like this really feels like it should have been a single. It hits all those marks that some of his biggest and most successful tracks have hit.
I enjoy, one of my favorite conversations to have with people is when a band that you love has an album that you love, but the album doesn't do well.
Yeah.
And you try to figure out what it was. And a lot of the time it's like they just released the wrong singles, right?
Sure.
Like I have argued 1,000 times that two of Green Day's biggest like record flops had amazing singles on that that never got released. Like how did Church on Sunday not become a single for Warning? Like how did Stuart in the Avenue not become a single for Insomniac? Like it just
those are the two best Green Day records.
Yeah. It's like how are those the two records that people
I'm glad
buy.
That we didn't have to talk about that in advance to acknowledge that Insomniac is, I usually tell people, I think Insomniac
that's my
is
my favorite Green Day.
I think Insomniac is maybe the best like classic pop punk album ever made.
Oh, I agree.
Warning is just an incredibly well-written album in general that I think that the world was not quite ready for Green Day to make such a turn musically at that point.
And I think that both of those albums though simultaneously are like, I don't know if Stuck With You and Geek Stink Breath were the right songs to introduce Insomniac to the mainstream audience, nor, I mean, Minority maybe, but like Warning should have never actually been a single released off of that record. It's just not catchy enough. My point being that, yes, Addicted to Spuds, clear as day, should have been what you pushed out to promote this record. Like all the other things aside, this should have been your lead single. And then you could do Living in America. At least fucking on Dare to Be Stupid, we found out that I Want a New Duck was released as a radio single. This wasn't even a radio single.
I know. It's really, really weird. And it does make me think again that like, I'll bet Living with a Hernia came out and didn't do that well. And I think Scotty Brothers probably just maybe prematurely were just like, forget it. And
well, they released
like the budget for the album for promotional purposes probably just ended immediately.
So
they let it go.
Something that I noticed, and we'll get into this when we finish up the album for sure, but Living with a Hernia was released as a single in October and Christmas at Ground Zero was released as the single and music video in November. So it almost feels like that was a very quick, like, ooh, this isn't hitting as hard as we want it to. Let's try to push out this Christmas song as quickly as possible. And as you said earlier on an episode, as cheaply as possible.
Exactly. Like, no, so that makes sense. They probably were just like, ooh, this didn't make what we wanted. We got to pivot. And they jumped to the Christmas song because of when it was. Totally get that. And then I guess when that didn't do well either, they were like, well, let's stop throwing money at this and move on.
Yeah, well,
it's a shame because, again, I really do think this, you know, again, Al fans know this. This is definitely maintains like this pops up in medleys for him to this day. This is still like a notable track of his, without a doubt. Again, in my opinion, the most notable parody on this record.
For sure.
In terms of his like looking at Al now and the only one that he called right, where, again, this is like people still you still hear Addicted to Love on the radio to this day.
Yeah. Going to any grocery store in America.
Who's then they should be the ones playing Addicted to Spuds.
100%.
They should be moving potatoes with this track. I don't know who makes playlists for grocery stores, but I hope someone's listening to this podcast and can help with this.
You've been lost in the woods for hours now, stumbling around in the dark. You come around the bend and see two people roasting marshmallows over a roaring fire. They see you coming into the clearing and gesture over to pull up a log. Welcome to Campfire Ashes. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jess. Join us as we tell each other our originally written spooky stories around the campfire and then dive into the lore and legends that inspired them. Is it something that goes bump in the night? Is it something menacing lurking past the tree line? Or is it just weird and otherworldly? You'll find it here on Campfire Ashes.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or right here on the Geekscape Network.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.